Hello and welcome to today's episode of Rainer on Leadership, your online home for leadership lessons and advice for both the local church and the workplace. I'm your host, Jonathan Howe, and as always, I'm joined by Tom Rainer, the president and CEO of Lifeway Christian Resources.
I love seminaries. I have a seminary background. I have a couple of degrees from a seminary. I love what many seminaries are doing today. I love seminary training, a lot of the college training that is provided of ministers. And yet, when it's all said and done, I simply have to say that no matter how much training you get, formal training, formal education, there's still areas that are lacking. I don't know if it's the seminary's responsibility. I'm not even suggesting that. But there are areas where pastors need to be trained. And so, Jonathan, for this time, we're just going to look at some of those key areas and what's involved, what it means, and perhaps what we can do to improve it.
And by training, you're not talking about how to preach and the doctrinal training and stuff that you do get at a seminary. It's just, it's not that they're doing a bad job. It's just there are things outside of their purview that pastors need to know.
And the reality of it is, even if you did provide some of the training for some of these areas, it wouldn't apply until these pastors and other staff members get in churches themselves.
Yeah. So, and a lot of it's contextual as well. I mean, what one person knows about this subject or this topic would be totally different for a different church.
Exactly.
All right, the first area that you listed where pastors need to be trained for the 21st century is a new language. And you're not talking foreign language, but social media.
Well, it depends on to whom you're speaking.
To some people, social media is a foreign language.
It is a foreign language to many people. On the same day that we're doing this recording this podcast, I also did a television interview, and some person was asking me about millennials and social media, and I told the interviewer, I told the lady, I said, when it's all said and done, social media is a new language, and I said, I would have never imagined 5 to 6 years ago, for example, at Lifeway, that we would have so many people who are not only involved in social media, but some for whom that is their main role, like you, Jonathan. And as a result, it has become one of the key areas of my organization. Well, here's the bottom line. If you don't speak social media, you're not speaking contemporary culture language. Now, social media has broad implications. It's not just Twitter. It's not just Facebook. It's not just blogs. It's not just Pinterest. It's not just Google+. The list goes on and on and on. It has many implications, but it's the knowledge of this diverse offering of different ways to communicate, and it's picking a few of them and communicating on that platform.
Now, which would you suggest a pastor to, you know, if they haven't been in it, where do they start?
I would get on Twitter to begin with. I would just, because you can communicate short, pithy messages. Mm-hmm. Secondly, I would get a blog, and I would communicate at least weekly on that blog and let the church members know about it. It can replace the old newsletter, the typical, stereotypical newsletter. So I would start with those two, and then I'd probably go to Facebook. Those would be my 1, 2, or 3. How about you? You're the expert.
See, I like the Twitter first. I'm a Twitter first kind of guy. However, if your people are on Facebook and you're on Twitter, it doesn't really do you much good.
True.
I would see which social media area is best for your context.
So, and it may be Facebook.
It might be Facebook, might be Twitter. It's probably one of those two. It's probably not going to be the other stuff. I love the idea of the blog replacing the newsletter. I think churches can do more online to get information to them, and you push stuff, you know, push people to that via either Facebook or Twitter. So just find out what's best for your people. Start there.
It does provide a bit of exposure, though. It can be positive and it can be negative. Yeah. I've talked to many pastors who said, you cannot believe what's on the Facebook page right now. You can't believe what they're saying about me. And they let the public see it, or let anybody who has access see it. And so it's a double-edged sword, but it is the new language, and you need to learn it.
The second area is a non-Christian culture.
There was a day when we talked about America being an anti-Christian culture. I really think that that day is beginning to pass. There is still some antagonism. There's still negativity toward Christians. Of that, I do not want to deny. But more and more religion, faith systems, Christianity and as a specific faith system is not even considered by many people. They're becoming part of the nuns, not even religiously affiliated. The Pew Research spoke of how that number had gone from 15% of the adult population to 20% of the adult population. And if you do those type of numbers, that means a 33% increase from 2007 to 2012. And we are becoming more and more just non-Christian, where at least in the eyes of those who are not believers in Christ, it is an irrelevant and religion that only reeks of antiquity.
And you mentioned that rise of the nuns, the N-O-N-E-S, not the N-U-N-S.
Thank
you. That kind of plays into number three, though, because of the rise of the nuns, we are seeing a decline in cultural Christians in the church. So people are really that middle, the squishy ground, the people who play Christian, they play Christian, those are starting to delineate themselves as actually Christian or none.
I think that there are two major factors affecting decline in churches today. Now, there are others, but I'm going to say there are two. One of them that we've talked about before is simply your most active members are attending less.
Yes.
If someone is attending, if it's a four Sunday month and they go to a... If it's a four Sunday month and they go to three Sundays instead of four, they have decreased their activity and their attendance by 25%.
And you haven't lost a member.
And you haven't lost a member, and you still consider them active.
Yeah.
You still think that they're around on a regular basis. That's number one. Number two is some people who would come to church mainly for cultural pressure no longer are coming to church, and that will become more and more pervasive as the days go. So you're losing those, you call them the squishy middle, that's a good name, and you're also losing the frequency of your most active members.
Yeah. The fourth area that pastors need to be trained for the 21st century is a new work-life balance.
On a previous podcast, we had talked about smartphones, and I mentioned in that podcast how I am blessed that I did not have a smartphone when I was a pastor. A smartphone can be a blessing. It can connect you to the internet. It has all kind of apps that are available for you. It's your alarm clock. The list goes on and on and on. Even as we speak right now, you're using a smartphone to do the theme message for this podcast. I'm using it over here to time us. It has multiple usages. But also the inverse of that, the negative relationship of that, is that that means you are connected 24/7, or you can be connected 24/7. It's not just smartphones, it's technology, but it's also the nature of being a pastor. It's the nature of being on a church staff that is hard to turn off, it's hard not to be connected, and work-life balance is becoming more and more of a challenge.
Would you consider pastors needing to take a smartphone break, a scheduled time of maybe sabbatical from their smartphone?
I don't know if I can, because I can't do it. I've tried. I feel like I'm missing out. I would hope that some could, but the reality of it is, my perspective is that if I'm away from my smartphone too long, that when I get back, I have too much catching up to do. But yes, to answer your question, they should take some kind of break from their smartphone. I just haven't learned how to do it. Maybe they can teach me how.
I see people doing social media fasts, and that really wouldn't work for me because it's really my job. So that would be like me just taking a 2 month break or whatever from work. And
yeah, it would be, Jonathan.
That wouldn't be good.
That would not be good.
I don't think you'd like that. But as far as the social media fast and just short breaks, you know, I try, and my wife, she really gets on to me about this, but whenever we have dinner at night, I put the phone in the other room.
I do that.
So
whenever
we have dinner, family dinner, you know, with three boys and her, I try to keep it away, and then...
Then you can't wait to get back to it.
You're killing me here. That's true. She would agree with that. But and the second thing, if I'm out on a date night with her, I try to keep it in the pocket and not really worry about it.
I do the same thing when talking to Nellie Joe. I put the phone typically in another room. That's the only way I'm not going to look at it. Had a poignant moment, almost a pitiful moment, a few days ago. I was babysitting one of my grandchildren, my oldest grandchild, Cannon, and his younger sister, Harper. And Cannon came up to me and said, they call me Rad Rad.
Uh-huh.
That's the name for granddad. He said, Rad Rad, you ready to play? He's 4 years old. I said, sure. He said, would you go put your phone away? Wow. He recognized that phone was a distraction for his granddaddy, and he didn't want to have to compete with the phone.
We're going to blame Jess on that.
You can blame Jess on that. You know what I did?
You put the phone away.
I put the phone away. In fact, there was a voice in the back of my head called Nelly Joe saying, turn it off.
The fifth area of training is dealing with unregenerate church members.
Well, we've talked about cultural Christians. They're the ones who know they're not believers, and they're the ones who show up at church or have in the past just because of the cultural pressure to do so. There's another group that actually have some type of cognitive assertion. They have some type of declaration that they're a Christian. It may be mental assent. It just may be some type of false security.
They said a prayer. They walked an aisle,
something of that effect. And they're not really Christians. And so they're more and more unregenerate church members in our churches. And the issue is, how are we going to deal with them? How do you evangelize someone who believes they are a Christian? Mm. And that's one of the great challenges we have. And if you have unregenerate members, aren't you going to have a different behavior from them than the regenerate members? Obviously so.
So what does the training there look like?
The training there, first of all, looks like to be able to recognize unregenerate behavior. Secondly, to do something about new members who come in so the problem does not perpetuate itself. So when new church members come in, you want to make certain that they not only understand the doctrinal issues of the church, not only understand the expectations belonging to a church, but we will do everything to make certain that they are converted, that they are regenerate. Some of this is up front, that information that they need, and some of it is our own discernment as we work with new members.
I know a great resource that they could use for that.
Here we go.
Church.
I wasn't going to say it. You have to say it.
I am a church member.
Oh, that's a wonderful book. I'm sure my wife loves it.
But we know, we've heard that time and time again, everywhere, every time that you and I travel somewhere, somebody tells us about how they're using it in their church, how it's helped their church, how it's helped the membership.
That's wonderful. Let's go to number six.
Number six, the community is a mission field.
There was a day when we talked about going on mission, and at the very, very least, it meant leaving the state.
Yeah.
Most of the time, it meant going out of the country. Mm-hmm. Today, the mission field has come here. That does not mean we neglect the international field or other places in North America, but almost any town now has ethnic groups, religious groups that have come to town that represent the world. It is a great challenge, but at the same time, it is a great opportunity. We need to recognize our community as a mission field. We will treat it differently, we will pray differently, and we'll have a different attitude toward it if we do so.
And this is a topic I know that you cover a lot in the upcoming book, Autopsy of a Deceased Church. That's one of those areas that churches tend to neglect on their way to decline and eventually death.
You know, you're really becoming good at this, Jonathan.
Trying.
Within about 2 minutes, you've mentioned two of my two latest books. I'm very proud of you. But you're exactly right. We talk about churches that are dying. We talk about churches that have died, and one of the most common reasons is the community changed, but the church didn't change, and so the church died as a result.
Number seven is less automatic cultural respect for the church leaders. And in the past, we've mentioned this, that the pastor was a pillar of the community in the past. And now it's somewhat of an embarrassment for some pastors to be a pastor in some communities.
It is, and it depends on what the community. There's still so-called Bible Belt communities that have some level of respect for the pastor. But when you look at almost any survey that has been done of who do you respect or who commands the greatest respect and our favorability ratings or whatever you want to look at, pastors are pretty low.
Yeah.
You have to say, Thank goodness for attorneys, because they're typically below pastors.
Attorneys and politicians.
Attorneys and politicians are two of the groups that tend to go below pastors. But other than that, the pastors have a tough time. They're just not held in the high esteem they once were.
There was a recent release of the most respected jobs that Christianity Today covered, and it listed pastors around number seven or number eight. So
I remember it. I don't remember the details, but that's typical of the surveys we're seeing.
Yeah, and it seemed like that 50 years ago, maybe even 30 years ago, we would have seen pastors top three, top four.
I believe so. I would have thought it had been near the top, very respected, very revered position.
Number eight, a more critical world.
We've talked about this on a number of occasions. We've related it to burnout. We've related it to depression. We've related it to challenges in ministry. There are different reasons for that. One is the one we just said. This is a less revered position, mm-hmm. so therefore the criticisms are going to be more frequent and more open. We've also talked about how social media makes it much easier to criticize.
Well, it also projects opportunities for criticism a lot broader than in the past.
It does.
So podcasts and sermons and things like that, anybody in the world can listen to it or read it about it on a blog. and instead of just people in the local community and local church.
And of course, all of us notice this reality. It is easier to criticize behind a keyboard or behind a smartphone than it is to talk to someone face to face. So the opportunities are more pervasive, and we're seeing more and more. And this is relating. This is really relating to depression, relating to burnout, and more unhealthy churches.
Now, number nine is an area that I know that is covered in seminary, in most seminaries at least, and that's a greater need for leadership skills. So, what specifically are you referring to here?
Many times when we think of a pastor, we think about the pastor leading the organism called the body of Christ. We don't often think about the pastor leading the organization called the local church. The organization is made up of people. The organization is made of programs and ministries. The organization has a budget. The organization has to lead volunteers. The organization often has to lead staff. Many pastors have not been equipped with those skill sets. Many pastors come with a good theological training, good preaching skills, and yet when they are asked to lead, and quite frankly, leading volunteers takes a special type of leadership approach and skill, and when they're asked to do this, they fall flat. And as a result, many churches are in an organizational chaos because there's not good leadership that is provided by the pastors and staff.
And most times, when the organizational leadership struggles, the organism leadership follow suit.
It's so true. It's not either or. The body of Christ as an organism is only healthy when the organization is healthy. Organization is only healthy when the organism is healthy. And we need more and more pastors who have leadership skills. You can go all the way back to Moses and Jethro, his father-in-law. And as he was dispensing justice, Jethro said, "This is not good. You're trying to do it all yourself." And he gave him some organizational principles that he needed to have, some leadership principles. Well, if it was needed for Moses, I can assure you it's needed for many pastors today.
And the final one is more churches in need of revitalization.
I think that if you were to ask me what some of my greatest passions of ministry are today, I would have never thought this one would have been right near the top, but it's right near the top now, and that is church revitalization. I love church planning. Mm-hmm. I love personal evangelism. Mm-hmm. There's so many things that I do love. I love the general discipline of church health. But right now, I am very passionate about church revitalization. And I think one of the reasons that God has given me this passion, I can think of others, Chuck Lawless at Southeastern Seminary, Adam Greenway at Southern Seminary, others who have this great passion. It's a reality.
Yeah.
Churches, 90% of churches in America are either declining or they're growing slower than their community. So they're losing ground. They're losing the share of the population that belongs to the heart of Christ. Churches need revitalization. They need organizational revitalization. They need spiritual revitalization. They need evangelistic revitalization. And the list could go on and on and on and on. And I don't want us to lose our emphasis on church planning. I don't want us to stop talking about new churches and the emphasis that is there. But from my perspective, it is not either or. It is both and. And we have, depending on who's counting, anywhere from 300,000 to 350,000 to 400,000 churches, Protestant churches in America. And a lot of them are on the way toward death.
Yeah.
Most of them are in some type of decline situation. We need more and more leaders to step up. You were with me not too long ago when I preached at Southeastern Seminary.
I was. Great trip.
Preached a message from Revelation 3, and I talked about the church at Laodicea, and I talked about how that church is so stereotypical of many churches today, the lukewarm church. And I told the students who were there, if you have a call to the international field, don't neglect it. If you're going to a dangerous mission field, don't neglect it. But God has to call out more and more people toward these old, established churches that are struggling for identity, struggling to even survive, and we need more and more people who will have a heart for these churches and a heart for the communities they serve.
Do you think something that makes revitalization so difficult is that there is not one kind of framework that you can put on every church to help toward revitalization? Every situation is different. What one church may see as revitalization may actually be disbanding, giving it to a church plant and becoming part of them, you know, a church merger. Another one just may need a change in leadership. There's so many different ways and methods of revitalizing churches that we really can't program it.
I think you're right, Jonathan. The the issue of revitalization is broad. It has many implications. And basically what you're saying is not easy.
No.
There's not a template. You have to come in and contextualize. You have to understand the situation of the church, where you are. And at least on the surface, the rewards are few. You don't get the affirmation that you often get if you're on the international field mm-hmm. or if you're in a new church plant. Matter of fact, you often get just the opposite.
Yeah.
You have to turn people in another direction. That's what revitalization means, to live again or to live in a different way. And often they resist that change. And instead of getting affirmation, you're getting criticism, you're getting challenges, and you're wondering if it's even worth it. That's why I think this is going to be one of the greatest challenges of the 21st century American church, and I'm sure other nations as well, and it's going to be one that we will address more and more at TomRainer.com and Rainer on Leadership.
This podcast was brought to you by Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary's Doctor of Ministry program. If you want more out of your ministry, want to study with a world-class faculty, and need to stay where you currently serve, the DMIN at Southeastern is the answer for you. Visit sebts.edu/DMIN for more information. That'll do it for this week's episode of Rainer on Leadership. Any final closing thoughts, Dr. Rainer?
I want to encourage our listeners as well as the readers of TomRainer.com to continue to give us input about what you would want to hear, what you would like to see written, what areas you want us to pursue. We want to try to meet the needs of you, particularly those of you in the local church. And we're not smart enough to know all the things that you might need. So let us know. We'd love to hear from you. And as you probably know, many of you listeners, as well as those who read the blog, as you well know, many times when you speak about us going in a direction, we follow.
Thanks for joining us this week on Rainer on Leadership. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us online at TomRainer.com.